we met at the bar at closing. It was very, very different. I can tell you that out of numerous people I've met in the bar, nothing has ever amounted to anything. I mean, this is more of an anomaly than anything else. You know?
Yeah.
So there are anomalies, but...
There are, but I will say this, like, the daytime, like, if you go meet a woman in the daytime, that's like a nuclear bomb going off. I mean, you, especially, like, if you learn how to be direct, powerful, and comfortable, and you start approaching women in the day, let's say you go out every day on your lunch break and approach two women in a direct, powerful, authentic, and comfortable way. You know, and there's some technique to that, but... you know, the principles here are what matters. So it's direct, it's authentic, and it's big balls. Like, it's like some of the stuff I've been describing earlier, like, you know, excuse me, I know it's really awkward right now, and everyone here is on their lunch break, but I just had to tell you that you are stunning. And if I don't meet you, I won't forgive myself. You know, I mean, you just like, boom, like that. It's literally like a bomb goes off. This is the kind of moment that women have been waiting for. And they can't believe it's happening. And the women around are getting jealous. Why doesn't this happen to me?
Right.
And it's an interruption from the boredom of the day. I mean, it's all that stuff. It demonstrates massive confidence on your part. I mean, you don't have to do anything to raise your value because only the highest value guy is capable of doing that. So it must mean that you're the highest value guy or one of them. And you do that twice a day, 5 days a week on your lunch break, and you follow up, you'll have, you know, something like a – I mean, unless you've got a lot of other pieces of the puzzle to get together still, you're going to end up with too many dates to deal with real quickly. Because those women are going to be interested in that guy. And you could easily, you know, I mean, I don't know, half of them are going to be single. So you could end up with 5 dates the following week, you know, or that week if, I mean, if you're crafty and you just... I mean,
you're crafty.
Nice. Well, I mean, so you can double up dates. You know, you can be like, hey, you know, let's meet up. And then you hang out with her for a couple hours, and then you, like, call it quits and bounce to the bar next door or whatever venue, comedy club, whatever, and then meet the next girl. Like, you know, have more than one date in a night. That's fine.
Right.
Or if you're, like, you know, David D's friend, Rick H., you can invite all your girls to the same date and then have them compete over you. But that's an advanced maneuver I recommend.
Wow. I can picture a number of ways that would work.
That was how my first threesome happened, was pulling that stunt. But, you know, I'm not saying that it will always work that way, and it is an advanced maneuver. Like, I would get your shit together first. Get yourself effective and comfortable meeting one woman and having that go well and so forth before you put yourself in the lion's den. Because make no mistake about it, you're going to have a whole lot of frame controlling to deal with and emotional energy. I mean, it can really work for you, but you're going to have to be good at managing it or it's going to blow up in your face.
Oh, yeah. I could see, you know, because women, it's so funny. I've heard it said time and time again that men get dressed up to go out for women, and women get dressed out or up to go out for other women.
Oh, yeah.
Competitive. So, you know, I could
extremely
be either a total nightmare or a dream come true. I don't think it's middle.
Yeah, well, not only that, you got to get this too. And this I actually learned from my sister, who's pretty brilliant about social dynamic stuff, even though I've repeatedly asked her to work for us and she's politely declined. She frequently says, you know, when a guy and a girl go out, the guy is showing off his girl.
Yeah.
He's showing off the woman. The woman is showing off her relationship.
Right.
It's different. And so, like, if you're a secure, confident guy and you've got a really hot woman with you and other guys are looking at her or even walking up and flirting with her or whatever, I mean, you may get jealous, but to the degree that you're secure, you're actually going to like that because it's like, that's right. That's who I'm going home with. Like, you're showing her off. Like, she's like your prize, right? I remember, like, the last woman that I was in a serious relationship with, there was frequently she'd get hit on, you know, while I was right there. You know, guys would walk up and try talking or whatever, and I'd just, you know, walk back into their conversation and be like, she's beautiful, isn't she? You know, stuff like that. You know, it's just like, yes, exactly. she's gorgeous and she's with me, and I'm very happy about that. You know, but women are showing off their relationship. Say that again.
I said, and then you just suck the wind out of that conversation without even trying. She's with which, and I'm just like,
hey, Brad, there's some kind of weird interference that was going on when you were talking. It almost sounded like another phone conversation was going on in the background. Say that one more time. We'll have to edit that too.
No, basically, I was just saying that it's, God, I forgot what I was saying. Oh, no, you suck the wind out of that conversation when you go do that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it doesn't occur to you as a threat and he gets that and she gets that, it's cool. If you come over and act all jealous and threatened, that's not so cool. It makes you look low value. A little bit of jealousy is good. It's just like it should be a spice. If you look like you're just slightly jealous but you've got it under control, your woman's going to get turned on because she wants to feel like she has that impact on you. Absolutely. But too much is, like, not good.
Actually, let's back up on something that I wanted to talk about too. Just kind of we touched on it, but it brings up a story that somebody was telling me. But you know, one of the things that I hear about, and we're talking about day game versus night game and things like that, is that, you know, during the day, or women, from what I can hear, from what I hear, they want to talk to people, but they don't want to talk to drunk assholes. So, you know, I've numerous times heard many women say, you know, I wish more men would come talk to me. But then, you know, they bitch and complain because drunk assholes are coming to talk to them. So during the day, you don't have to deal with that. You know, you're not
right. She hasn't been hit on by like 18 drunk guys in a row, so she's not already on the defensive and upset. And you're not drunk, so she's not going to be defensive around you, and she has no reason to assume that you would be.
Yeah.
And furthermore, there's a lot more to it than that. Daytime is a low distraction environment. Like, there's not a lot of other stuff going on. There's not, like, pounding loud music and competition and, like, you know, people talking. Like, it tends to be, like, especially if you're in a coffee shop or a bookstore or something like that. I mean, maybe if you're in a loud restaurant, it's still somewhat high distraction. But if you're in a lower volume, lower activity environment, it definitely helps because you stand out more, and your interaction with her is going to get more of her attention faster.
Right. You know, it's funny. Even on that note, I was talking to a subscriber, because it's really weird that Angel Eyes site has about 30% female subscribers, which is really strange. But, you know, this girl and I were emailing back and forth. It was kind of like a spirited debate. And, you know, she was saying, you know, something about, you know, well, you know, girls can go out and get and go home with guys, you know, pretty much on a whim. And I was like, yeah, that's true. Women don't have a problem with quantity. They have a problem with quality.
Yeah, I mean, I coach women as well as men. We're a co-gendered organization. We have male and female coaches. We have male and female clients, and that is exactly the case. The guys typically are concerned with, how do I meet a woman effectively? How do I get a woman at all? Or how do I not get shot down? And the women are concerned with, how do I meet the right kind of guy? Or, and here's the real kicker, how do I keep him interested after he's already met me? That's the real secret fear for women.
Yeah, that reminds me of that seminar we went to, and when they put up that one headline for the women. You know, if you don't know
what you're
probably thinking of leaving. And the whole crowd was like, that was profound. But it was so funny, because as soon as I wrote this back to this woman, it was like she had nothing left to say, because she knew I was right. She knew I was right. She basically, I think it was the response was, you're right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was
because you are right. I mean, that's exactly what they're dealing with.
Yeah. So guys, if you're out there and you're thinking about, you know, oh my gosh, she's probably getting hit on by 15 guys a day, or even 100 guys a day, but think about this, is that women are having a problem with quality of men hitting on them. It's not happening. And it's because a lot of the quality men just aren't opening their mouth.
Yeah, well, actually, it's a little worse than that for women. I frequently say this to women when they ask me about, you know, why I teach this and what, especially when I'm working with guys, you know, what I'm teaching them and so forth. And I tell the women, listen, I'm doing you a favor. because 80% of the men are afraid to talk to you, nice, wussy, and needy. And so, you know, they love to make a woman happy, but they're not going to be attractive. And so even if you give them a chance, you're going to get bored after a while, and at best you'll be settling. And then 20% of the men have been getting girls since high school, and so they take women for granted. And they're the guys who typically have the confidence or the balls to approach, and they're the guys who look hot because they know how to do that, or they know how to be that way, or they've got it in their blood. And so, you know, when women say men are assholes, they're only talking about 20% of men. Those are the 20% of men that they have any sexual interaction with. The other 80% of men, they just don't even really experience.
They don't even know they exist.
Yeah, and on the occasions that they do, they get bored with them or they break up with them because it's like it's not exciting, it's not fulfilling. So my job is to take the 80% of guys that are sweet and nice and would love to make a woman happy and add a little bit of bad boy and sexiness to them so they can be attractive and get her attention in the first place and keep her aroused or keep her happy or make you know have her be fulfilled. But since, you know, that guy hasn't been getting girls since high school, he's not going to take her for granted. You know, he's
right.
He's going to appreciate
her. It's like knight in shining armor type of deal, like Sir Lancelot. I mean, these
guys
are...
the romantic hero. Exactly. That's my job, to craft romantic heroes. There you go.
Yeah, they're badasses. They're complete badasses. Everybody knows it, but they treat women with respect and dignity and stuff like that. But still, you know, when it's time to get it on, they get it on. So...
Yes, and that and typically when I explain it to women that way, they're a huge fan, and they try to refer their guy friends to me.
holy cow, I got an awesome guy you need to meet.
Exactly. So what they're dealing with is that reality. I mean, my numbers may be off, but I don't think it's the detail that matters here. I think overall that's, you know, that's largely true. A hot quality guy is more of a scarce commodity, the more scarce commodity than a hot quality woman, because women can alter their attractiveness to men, you know, physically much more easily than men can alter their attractiveness to women, since women get attracted to a guy's emotions and personality, not his looks. I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but women are 80% attracted to men based on their personality and their emotions. And they're only 20% attracted to a man for his physical looks. It's about vice versa for men, at least initially. Men are attracted to a woman almost entirely physically at first. And then, you know, later if she turns out to be not worth his while mentally, he'll leave her. Or he'll stick around if he likes a relationship he's unhappy with. She could be the coolest person in the world, but if her looks don't do it for him, the door was shut from the beginning. So women, there's a lot, it's easier for women to control the way that they look than it is for men to control who they're being and how they express themselves emotionally, at least traditionally. And so we actually have more work cut out for us than they do, in order to be attractive. We've got to do mental work. They just have to do physical work. And so there's a scarcity of us. There's an abundance of them.
Oh yeah, yeah. Beautiful women. It's so funny, but beautiful women are everywhere if you look. I mean, it's unbelievable. You can go places and you're just like, holy cow, there's lots of hot chicks here. And
I know it makes it hard to stay in a relationship sometimes.
Yeah, but you know the bad part about it is that, you know, when you get down to the nitty gritty, a lot of these chicks just straight suck, man. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny, but it's very true. And guys will. I mean, and on the flip side of women, you know, the guys will stick with a lot of these women just because they're hot, even if they do suck, just going back to that, what guys are looking for. And women will stick with asshole guys because they have superior social status and social dominance, and so they'll stick with him, even if he's ugly, you know, lots of times, because that's a trait that is, it's, like I say, those are four big traits that we did research on that are key. It's the physical dominance, the physical attractiveness, the social dominance, but the biggest one was social status. And, you know, that comes in with, you know, money and stuff like that, being a provider to a certain degree. But, you know, it's almost, they're almost inverse for men and women.
Yeah, so in fact, social status, that is so important. Like, this is a human issue, actually. It's actually true for both men and women, But again, men are attracted to women physically first, so women can get a pass on their physicality until the guy notices this. Whereas women screen guys for their personality and social status immediately based on their body language, subcommunication, style, and other things, like how other people react to them. So men don't get the physical pass very often. If he's an exceptional physical specimen, he might. But even then, he's just in the same boat as a hot chick. He gets a pass until she notices his personality. And here's what it is. You, as a human being, cannot be attracted to someone that occurs to you as lower self-esteem or lower social value than yourself, period. So, you know, like the whole conversation that David D. brought up in his book, Attraction is Not a Choice, it happens to you. You know, that's profound, and it has a lot of implications beyond the way that people normally look at it. Like most people say, okay, if attraction isn't a choice, then if I make myself attractive, she's going to be attracted to me whether she wants to or not. Well, yes, that's true. However, if you occur to her as lower social value, lower social status in the moment than she does, or you occur to her as lower self-esteem, and those two things are pretty interrelated, then she cannot be attracted to you. She cannot. And vice versa. If you meet a girl who's really, really hot, and then over the course of conversation and discovery with her, she starts to occur to you as being like pretty low value in a general way and like low self-esteem, you might have the physical attraction still there, but you're not going to like her. Not that way. And the most that'll happen is, you know, like sex. A relationship's not going to be very feasible for you. And even sex with her, you'll get bored with real fast. Whereas by contrast, a woman who's not as physically attractive as she is, but occurs to you as like higher value than you or of your value, you know, a little bit hard to get, elusive, you know, sought after, like somebody like that is going to be a huge turn on. Even if her physical looks aren't as perfect as the first girl, because she has a high self-esteem and a high social value, and it has an impact on your attraction for her continually.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true. Like I say, I mean, now we're starting to talk into things that have actually been researched. It's not just from experience. So that's kind of the other thing, too, that I want to get across to people is that, you know, yeah, there's one thing to have some street knowledge behind it, and that's what I call a lot of street psychology. But there's also, and that even I've looked at, you know, obviously with Donna, I'm looking at some of this stuff that applies, you know, social status is a number one. I mean, above and beyond is probably 50% of the entire puzzle, over all the other three, you know, physical attractiveness is in there, but physical attractiveness is more of an indirect thing than it is a direct for guys, because basically what happens is that when you start becoming more physically attractive, and I classify that in with clothes and getting your body in shape and hairstyle and stuff like that. It's a lot like carrying around $5,000 in cash. You naturally just feel better about yourself, and that translates into self-esteem, which translates into higher social status and social status. So it's
yes,
more indirect indicator, and it reflects those other things than some of the other things. It's not necessarily something that is going to. I don't want to. It can get you in the door, but it's not the thing that's going to make or break the deal, I guess. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, also, there's also the conversation we had earlier about the chemistry of it all. Like, literally, as a guy, if you are involved in physical activity on a consistent basis, your testosterone level is going to be higher,
right,
especially if you're doing work that builds muscles. And your testosterone level does not just impact your muscle growth. It impacts your emotional state. You know, you will feel more dominant, more powerful. I mean, that's going to get communicated on every level, and you'll just occur as more attractive. And then there's some argument to be made that women are actually, you know, getting a sense, like you know, of your body's chemistry, like they're detecting your pheromones,
right,
and testosterone level, it gets them excited at a physical level. So, you know, for all those reasons, I think it's fantastic. But again, you know, it's a social status that rules the day, and that's so important to have a high status self-image. That's really, it's probably the biggest most important aspect of all of this. Again, a high status self-image person is going to take care of themselves physically. They're going to be responsible for their body. So not having your body handled is an indicator of low self-esteem or low self-perceived status.
Right, exactly. Because other people of high status, they do those things and they can pick those things up and they appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, and let me be clear here. Even if you have a physical disability, like if you've been in an accident or you just have a physical disability from birth or whatever, like it's not what you have, it's what you do with what you have that matters. Because women are looking for what has he done with what he has, because that's what they make it mean. They make it mean something about your personality. It all gets back to your personality. So, like, you know, for example, we have a client who's completely blind in our coaching program. And, you know, we've been working with him for some time. And we'll take him out to bars and clubs and other places that are loud. You know, so not only can he not see, he's deprived of the majority of his hearing as well. And that guy, I'll open a conversation with a group of people. You know, I'll have him, like, standing right next to me. I'll open the conversation and be like, hey, guys, how y'all doing tonight? They're like, hey. I'll be like, hey, let me introduce you to my friend Sam. And they see him. And he's, you know, he got sunglasses on or whatever and a cane, so he obviously looks like he can't see. And so they'll typically be like, hey, how are you? And they'll be a little more friendly than they might have been ordinarily. And he'll immediately lean over and just get all cocky with them, be like, sniff, sniff, like, one of you guys smells cute. Who is it? You know, like, stop addressing me with your eyes. You know, and then he'll, like, hold his hand out and be like, all right, who can beat me at Thumb Wars? And he'll play Thumb Wars with a girl, and then he'll cheat and put his hand on top of her thumb and get her thumb and then just be like, you just got beat by a blind guy. What do you got to say about that? You know?
Yeah.
You know? But, like, it's not the fact that he's blind or not blind. It's that what he's done with what he has demonstrates confidence and high self-esteem. I mean, it actually got to the point at one point where other clients would complain. When we all went out together, they'd be like, well, he's just doing so well because he's blind. And I'm like, dude, do you have any idea?
How does that sound, though?
Yeah, it's hilarious. But he's actually taken what would be an obstacle and made it into a boon, you know, like that which you cannot fix feature. We had another client. He actually lived with Alan and I. Alan's one of my business partners. And he lived with Alan and I for 5 weeks and then became one of our instructors. He now works for us out in North Carolina, I believe somewhere near where you're at, Brad. And he was very, very overweight at the time. He's been working on it a lot, so he's in a little better shape now. But at the time, he was, I mean, very overweight, just large and in charge kind of overweight. And so, you know, it was showing up as an obstacle for him, you know, because he would be flirty and stuff like that, but then he'd feel shot down if some girl brought up his weight or he didn't know how to deal with it. And I said, listen, the thing you need to do is feature it. Call it right out. So I'd have him rolling into groups of, you know, mixed groups with these alpha muscular guys with these hot girls around him, and he'd just, like, break open the conversation and be like, hey, guys, you all cannot leave tonight until you rub the Buddha's belly. And he'd just grab somebody's hand and, like, have them rub his stomach, and everyone would just bust out laughing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like he's calling it out. He took a disadvantage and made it an advantage. I mean, that's a principle for people to apply right there. But it's also gets back to this concept of confidence and status, you know. And, you know, he goes to the gym now. He works out. He manages his diet and all stuff. It's one of the things that he's been doing actively since he worked with us. And, you know, when I say he was very overweight, you know, we're talking over 300 pounds. So, you know, he had a ways to go. You know, so when women who he's known from those days see him now and they see him, you know, 130 pounds lighter or whatever it is and, like, in a much healthier pallor and stuff like that, and he's still got the rock star personality, it's actually even better because he's more confident. Like, all of a sudden women who had screened him out previously are now interested in him. Because they're like, wow, you know, he still doesn't look as good as someone who's, you know, got a low percent body fat. I mean, he's still overweight, but it's like it's what he does with what he's got that's interesting to them.
Oh, it's that self-depreciating humor that just rots. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like you're not taking yourself so seriously. that's one of the things I do too. You know, kind of going, even going back to the whole, you know, your, you know, one of your first three things for the listeners to do, you know, in the mall, is that, you know, just like you were saying, hey, my girlfriend usually picks out my clothes. You know, what do you think? I mean, that's self-depreciating humor. You know, people get it, and it gives what it does. I call it tease bait. It's basically giving somebody bait to tease you and have fun with you. You know, even with them rubbing the belly. I mean, it basically they get to tease him a little bit. You know, and he gets to tease him back. Like, oh yeah, well now it's my turn. You know what I'm saying? I get to rub your belly. I mean, it's exactly what happens, and I like that. I like the self-depreciating humor to set up what I call tease bait. I have no other word for it, but you know, getting as you can probably tell, my whole entire game is basically setting people up to tease me so that I can get them or make it look like they're trying to do the things that I want to do. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's basically, if you really want to get down to the nitty gritty, that's pretty much what it is. So, but it, again, it goes back into that self-depreciating humor that, you know, if you can make fun of yourself, but be comfortable making fun of yourself and confident about it, there's something very strange that happens with that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's different. You know, people are like, wow, okay, that's my job to make fun of you because of that, but you're making fun of yourself. What's this guy about? It makes people very curious, too.
Well, it also means something about you. Like, if you make fun of yourself in, like, a powerful way, like, not in a wussy approval-seeking way, but in that kind of, like, yeah, I'm hot shit, and I am so comfortable in my own skin that I'm willing to make fun of myself. I mean, it immediately, it indicates, wow, this guy actually is hot shit. He's confident. He has high self-esteem. He's fun. And if he's going to be fun about his own imperfections, he'll probably be fun about mine.
Exactly.
You
got to
get that women are always evaluating you from that perspective. You know, like, is his car clean? Because that means if he keeps his car clean and he keeps his room clean, it means it's not just some act. It means he takes care of his stuff, which means he'll probably take care of my stuff. You know, does he stay in shape? If he stays in shape, you know, that means he's probably in good physical shape for being in bed. He'll probably be in good physical shape later if I start dating him. He won't let himself go, and he'll appreciate that I'm in good physical shape, you know? There's all that stuff. It all gets related back to what it means about you and your potential interactions with her.
What do you think about this? And I, like I say, this is something else I do. But especially in the very beginning, I've always found that women really don't believe anything that comes out of your mouth anyway. So I always say something that's the very opposite of what it really is. Because if they're not going to believe it, I might as well get them to believe it in the way I want them to believe it. You know what I mean?
like if she says, "What's your job?" and you say, "If I tell you, I have to kill you." It's classified,
right,
or something.
If somebody, like, oh man, the easiest thing, because everybody, every guy out there, somehow, some way, wants to talk about how big his dick is. So what I always have done, just playing around, I always talk about the 2-inch killer.
I've got a horrendous case of small cocks, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
blah,
you're just like, man, you don't want none of this. It's only about 2 inches, you know what I mean? You know, stuff like that, and it was really funny. Me and a bunch of guys were just joking around with this. This is years ago. I was in college that, you know, we started talking about this stuff, and women were, you know, they were laughing, and it's so funny. Stuff like that, all this – you know, self-depreciating humor, and even trying to get the women to do what you want them, or accusing them of trying to jump you. You always get hit in the arm or something. But it was when I was in a strip club one time, and again, like I say, this is probably 8 years ago, when I said this to one of the strippers, she was saying something, and I said something about the 2-inch killer. She goes, you got to shut up, because the last guy that told me that was hung like a horse. And I was like, put that in the memory bank.
Exactly. Note to self. Yes.
So like, if somebody is wondering, like, so I always talk about it, like, in a playful way, like, I'm not all the time, but, you know, sometimes if money comes up, I'll say, oh, man, I'm broke as shit, you know, being funny, because, you know, I'm not going to tell them how much I make, and they're not going to believe me anyway, So I might as well, you know, flip the script and make them believe the other way.
I get paid in tuna fish cans. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, you should see how much tuna I get every day for what I do. You know, just whatever wacky shit. But I like doing that type of stuff too. You know, it's like, because everybody gloats and has ego and tries to tell people. I guess my thing is that I've always known that if you have to say you are, you aren't. So.
Yeah, it's like that. Exactly. A confident guy doesn't have to prove that he's confident. Yeah.
Right. So if I have to say I'm rich, I'm not really rich. Because everybody already knows I'm rich. If I have to say, you know, that I'm cool, well, then I'm not cool, because if I was cool, everybody would know I was cool. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it. I remember being in field a month and a half ago and talking to these girls. I was in an interaction with one of my clients and a group of three girls, and this other guy starts talking to them and trying to get into the interaction. And I don't know. He brought up something, and I responded to it. You know, I was just kind of playing along, and he mentioned something about Native American Indians. I don't know how this came up, but something about one of the Native American Indian tribes. And I said something about it, something that I knew about it, and it was in kind of this sarcastic, joking way, like I was bantering, you know. And he's like, well, I guess in all my years at Princeton, I never learned that. You know, I was like, you're a joker, you know. Like,
yeah.
Like all the girls just looked at each other when they did that, and I looked at them and rolled my eyes, and I just, like, girl-coded them too. But, like,
right.
You know, like he's trying way too hard, you know. And we're just like, good for you, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just brought it. You just brought something up that's very, very interesting in that regard. And that's the trying to get people to understand what your life's about without saying it through stories and stuff. I mean, he could have probably went, you know, a dozen different ways with that instead of actually actively saying that, but kind of indirectly saying that he went to Princeton. You know what I'm saying? That would have been a lot different. Or like through your stories of travels and things like that. So I don't know. Do you go into that any with storytelling and trying to get people to, like, say if you first met somebody, you know, I typically have lots of, obviously you can tell, I've got lots of stories that I'll tell people. But in these stories, there's inherent glimpses into my personality and who I am and things like that. And so instead of me coming out and saying that this is who I am, it's like they can infer who I am based on these stories.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Women are always looking for that. They're looking for what things mean about you anyway, so you might as well give it to them in the format that they're looking for it in. If you say, I'm a really fun guy, and I'm a loyal friend, and I'm smart, and I do a good job, and I'm a responsible lover, and you just state it like that, it doesn't communicate powerfully, even though you're being direct, because they have no idea whether to know you're telling the truth or not. Now, if you've done the work of making a really strong connection with them to the point where they actually trust you and you say something like that, that can be effective. But, you know, by the time you've done that, you've already done a bunch of storytelling and rapport building anyway.
Yeah, so it's congruent.
You know, exactly. So, you know, what it is, you know, what there is to do is to share about yourself and your life. And they'll get who you are from that. This is actually a great topic, sharing yourself. And let me say a little bit about that, because this kind of touches on our original conversation about guys who are really intellectual and intelligent being interested in this area and seeming to have more trouble meeting women than guys who are less intellectual or less analytical and intelligent seem to have. And there's a difference between talking logically about something and sharing yourself about something. And so, remember I talked about how women are looking for the emotional level of communication and the physical one, and they're not looking for the logical one, at least when it comes to dating and mating. So, talking logically about something is literally passing informational data in a logical way. And as men, we tend to be really good at that. We like talking about the horsepower of our engines, sports team stats, political hierarchies, money, numbers. Like, we like to organize facts into categories and abstractions. We're good at logical talking, and that's useful. That's a useful way of communicating for certain things. For example, if I want to know, like, if I'm running late for a meeting at work and I want a cup of coffee, and I meet you on the street, like, as I'm walking my office, I'm like, "Hey, excuse me, do you know where there's the nearest Starbucks?" Like, I want to know how to get there in as efficient manner as possible. That's where talking logically is appropriate. Like, I'd love for you to tell me, go left here, right here, and then down one block, and it'll be on your left. That's a logical communication. I don't want you to start sharing with me about what Starbucks means to you, or the experience of sipping a delicious latte in the morning, or the impact that the Starbucks experience has had in your life, all right? That's sharing yourself, and that's not appropriate for that. By contrast, when you're connecting with a woman in a dating relationship context, talking logically is almost useless, and it's sharing yourself that should occupy the majority of your communication. And sharing yourself is like the minimum amount of logical data necessary for understanding, with the rest of the communication filled out with the significance of things, like what it means to you or what it meant to you, how you feel about it, or how you felt about it, or the impact that it had on you or others. That's how that communication looks. So, for example, you know, I when I'm talking to a woman that I've just met, one of the things I'll typically share with her or talk to her about for a light conversation, I'll be like, "All right, what are your top five movies of all time?" You know, it's like kind of a silly, fun, surface level way to get to know each other. And they say some movies, and I say my movies, and then we talk about when we first saw them, and, you know, like, what we, you know, like the way the movie, like, there's a scene in Lord of the Rings that I really like where, you know, these guys are going to charge over a hill for this big battle, and just, it's inspiring, you know, because they're facing overwhelming odds. I mean, you know, like, it's not about the fact that it's a fantasy movie and I like fantasy movies. It's like the feeling that I have when I watch it. That's what I'm sharing with her. Right. And that's where that connection happens. They want to know how you feel. They're attracted to your emotions. So,
which is why rock stars and bad boys get a lot of chicks, because they're taking them on an emotional roller coaster ride.
Well, yeah, and they also are expressing their emotions. I mean, look, Rage Against the Machine is all about anger, you know, so, like, they're expressing a lot of emotion in all their songs. You know, John Mayer, you listen to his music, you know, a lot of women tend to like his stuff, and there's a lot of emotion. It's like, you know, love or lust or affection or loss. You know, there's a lot of emotional content. He's expressing that stuff, and a lot of women, besides liking his music, are actually attracted to him because he occurs to them as this emotionally expressive guy. Women are really attracted to men who express emotion, not in a reckless, well, not always in a reckless way. You know, some rock stars are pretty reckless with their emotional expression, but even then it works for them, you know, so... gosh, there's a whole conversation around why women are attracted to rock stars. And I would say that this is one component of that. It's their ability to emote. It's their ability to express emotion reliably, express passion, and activate the emotional expression and experience for the woman.
Right.
You know, take them on an emotional journey.
Yeah, so that's good. That's good stuff. I mean, most guys don't even think about that, you know, how to, you know, because it's really funny, as you're brought up, at least most men, and me too, it's all about suppression of emotions. You know, if you get hurt, don't let anybody see you sweat. Don't let anybody, you know what I'm saying? And so you're translating that over into a woman where you can, now you're suppressing what you've got, but you're trying to bring out you know, with her, I mean, that it's kind of convoluted, I would think.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was going to say, you got anything else? Because we're running.
We've been on the phone for like 2 hours.
Yeah, we're 2 hours, man. You know what's funny is that every time I get on the phone with you guys, I mean, when I get on the phone with McKay, Wygant, any of these guys, I mean, this is all we do. And I keep complaining because I'm like, man, I need to record some of this stuff. And all of us are like, we need to record this. And so it's kind of like, to the fact now where I'm not going to have any conversations with anybody unless I record them, because some just profound stuff comes out every single time. Stories, you know, things that people are interested in. It's amazing. So I appreciate you doing this. This is really cool.
Well, you're very welcome. I appreciate you taking the time and giving me the opportunity to share as well, you know, with yourself and with your listeners. I'm much obliged, and
Man, like I say, this is good stuff. I mean, this is, you know, and again, this is coming from a man who is, you know, and this is you that's teaching both sides to both sexes. So, you know, I've always thought that if you have an insight into women and you're teaching women and seeing what they're complaining about, then you can translate that into men as well. So that's really good. Guys, if you want to go check him out, it's at AskRomeo.com. Opt in, jump in on the newsletter. It's definitely good stuff. And then what's the new site you have out now?
It's actually, if they go to AskRomeo.com and they sign in, they'll see our video blog where we're giving away a lot of free tips and content. And one of the blog entries, as well as a link on the side, goes to our new Dating and Attraction 101 multimedia self-study kit. It's a product that we just put together and that people can use to really work on this whole realm of themselves on their own if they're unable to take a boot camp or do semesters of coaching or any of that stuff. It's a plan of action for them. And there's some DVD content, some CD audio content, a workbook with a lot of exercises, as well as some online content and follow-up content as well. It's just a really amazing package. So definitely check that out.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So, like I say, we're pretty much done here. I'm going to sign off because I got to eat.
For sure.
Okay, appreciate you coming and being on the call, and we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks so much, Brad. Talk to you soon.